The Metis Tech Show.
Welcome to the Metis Tech Show, a show for HVAC professionals by HVAC professionals.
The Metis Tech Show.
All right, guys. So we always talk about the food that we love and things we love to eat. I want to throw something different in here. Let's talk about foods that we can't stand and or refuse to eat. For me,
I will own this subject.
Oh yeah, for me, it's eggplant. There's not many things I won't eat, but it's eggplant. I can't stand eggplant. My wife and I have been married 20 years, and every time she orders eggplant, we argue about it because she says, "Oh, I love eggplant," and then she orders it, and guess what? She's never happy. And I said, "That's because it stinks. It's a horrible food."
Right?
She had me grill some on the grill once, you know, soaked in olive oil, and I grilled it, and she didn't eat it, and I threw some on the grass because we got rabbits coming in our yard, we got coyotes, we got foxes, we got all kinds of skunks and raccoons and possums. A raccoon will eat anything.
Where do you live?
Basically near the woods, but here's the thing: all these animals came through, and nobody touched the eggplant I left on the grass.
Serious?
Yeah, I'm serious. None of the animals ate it. I have chickens. I threw the eggplant to the chickens. Even they refused to eat it. If you like eggplant, I'm sorry, but it's a horrible food. I won't eat it. Scott, yeah. What do you got? What's your food?
Oh, you name it. I'm a simple meat potatoes guy, so I don't like beans. Anything with the word bean in it, I won't eat it. Like refried bean, black bean, pinto beans, anything literally with bean in it, broccoli. I won't eat anything. I just don't like that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Juan, you're like me. You eat just about anything, but is there anything
but
you won't
one.
Eat?
There's one. I had to look it up because I cannot remember what to call it. Brussels sprouts.
Oh, the Brussels sprouts.
Yep. That's don't like that either.
A vile weed. Those things are disgusting.
Every time my wife puts it at home, I'm getting in the car.
Now, do you like asparagus?
I like asparagus. I tolerate
only
asparagus.
Only the tips.
I tolerate asparagus. I tolerate broccoli, cauliflower. I tolerate it. They're okay.
Now, let's ask the health nut in the group.
Oh, yeah. Bryn is a health nut.
Yeah, the health nut.
Who's, by the way,
had a cookie before we started.
He's only gained 30 pounds in the 6 or 7 months he's been here.
You know what? That's a true tradition.
I'm on my way back down. So I actually do like Brussels sprouts. If you guys remember when we had our last training meeting in
Atlanta,
I made Brussels sprouts, and I ended up eating all of them because nobody tried
one. You're probably the only one that ate them.
Yep. Yep, I ate them all by myself. But I will get flack for this. The food that I really don't like is eggs. Oh. I don't enjoy eggs.
Oh, my goodness.
I told you.
Now,
I have chickens just
now,
for
Brent,
the eggs.
Did you eat too much eggs and now you just don't like them, or have you never liked eggs?
So the story with the eggs is I tried them and I didn't like them, and every other time I've tried them, I still don't like them. Hmm. I've had them over easy. I've had them sunny side up. I've had them hard-boiled. I've had them scrambled, any way that you can think. I just don't like the texture, and there's something off about the taste for me.
See, the thing about eggs is there's like a
delicious
1,000 ways to cook them. Eggs and potatoes.
Oh, yes.
You can cook them 100, and they taste so different. All right,
my
so,
favorite meal that the restaurant we go to, Paul, has an egg on it
I get an extra egg. All right. So those are the things we want. That's pretty strange. I love eggs.
Paul,
I have eggs every day.
What's the strangest food you've eaten?
Well, when I was in Japan, they gave me chicken feet, which I had to try. You know, when in Rome, I'll try everything once. I had chicken hearts. They're okay, but you got to eat like 5,000 of them to fill up.
Make a meal.
They have these plums. I don't really like them either, but they're these pickled plums. They're just soaked in vinegar, and they really make your mouth pucker. But the horrible thing I ate there is a thing called natto. And I asked one of our Japanese colleagues there, I go, "What is natto?" And he says, "Do not eat. Come from very bad place." and I think it's just fermented soybean or something. That was pretty disgusting. I would never recommend anybody eat that again. But one thing I do, like a lot of people find strange, it's one of my favorite meals. In fact, in my family growing up, it was a traditional Thanksgiving Day food. It was stewed octopus. I love that.
Me too. And I loved when we could get it. I've eaten cow tongue and cow brain.
Yeah, I don't like cow tongue.
Cow tongue's not bad.
Yeah, it tastes you back. That's not cool.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. What's the strangest thing you've ever? I hate to tell the guy who hates eggs.
Yeah, believe it or not, the strangest thing I've even tried is eggs.
All right. I was expecting chicken nuggets.
This guy's got no life whatsoever. He's good. You know.
None.
Yeah. Yeah. His favorite color is clear.
Yeah. Gray.
All right, guys. So what brings us together today? What are we going to talk about?
Preventative maintenance.
Preventative maintenance. But I thought mini splits don't need preventative maintenance.
Oh, yes, they do. It's a mechanical piece of equipment.
So it's a refrigeration system, right? It's high temperature refrigeration. Is there any refrigeration system in existence on this planet that does not ever require maintenance?
Not to my knowledge.
No, I've never seen one. Every single refrigeration system in the history of the world has required and still requires maintenance. So, and that's a little, I think I've heard contractors say that in class. Well, there's no maintenance of these things, right? I said, no, of course there is. Buy a car that where the dealer, where the manufacturer says, no maintenance required. I want to see that car come out because I'll buy that one. Even if it is a hybrid, I'll still buy it. All right, so where do we start, Juan?
Let's start at the outdoor unit.
Okay. Let's talk about first, how often or when should I do maintenance?
It depends on the application. Yep. Sometimes you may have to do it 2 to 3 times a year, sometimes once. At the bare minimum, once a year. It all depends on the application.
All right. So back at the outdoor unit, you've shown up there to perform some routine maintenance. What are you going to do?
I'm going to visually inspect all the electrical connections, all the plugs, make sure they're in correctly, make sure that there's no wires that are shorted or rubbed and created a nick on the wire, which could cause them to short. Those are some of the things that I would look at.
Also, before I even start at the outdoor unit, oftentimes when I would do preventative maintenance, I would go to the indoor units first. When I first got on the customer's property, I take a look at those indoor units. If they needed to be completely torn out, blower wheels pulled out, I'm going to do all that stuff first and bring it outside. So while I'm doing my outdoor maintenance, I'm also going to use that opportunity to wash every indoor component that needs to be cleaned.
Yeah. So that time when you ask the end user, how often do you change the filter? And they get that glassy-eyed look and they just go, filter?
Mm. Then or she says, that's why I called you guys.
Yeah, then you know that's like, okay, there might be a problem here.
Yep.
Not to get sidetracked here, but I've actually on several occasions on a unitary furnace or an air handler had to take the squirrel cage blower wheel out and take it to a car wash and pressure wash it. It's the only way I was going to get all the stuff off the wheel.
Oh, that's smart.
Gets caked on.
Yeah, no, there's been caked on with all kinds of stuff. And pet hair, I think, is the worst one, so. And I have 2 cats, a dog, and 7 chickens. So I get a lot of that.
So, yeah, the other thing with the outdoor unit, we want to obviously inspect the coil, too. That's where we're doing our heat rejection in the summer. And we want to make sure that there's not a bunch of dirt, debris, dust built up inside there.
So, Bren, what do you – to wash our coils, what do you do with
– Yeah, the recommendation is we use water only. Right, we have a protective coating on our outdoor unit coils. If we start putting any sort of solvent or cleaner in there – it can risk doing some damage to that coil.
Yeah. A lot of guys will get these acid cleaners and they, it says the 1 ounce for every half gallon or whatever. And they'll just take half a gallon and mix it in with half a gallon of water. And those things can just
pour it in.
Yeah. Because it'll eat away at those copper coils like nothing. But while we're talking about.
It's not smoking. It's not mixed water.
Yeah, exactly. But while we're talking about the coils, there's something that you got to be careful of. And I don't know if a lot of people even look at this, but people love to throw bark mulch around the outdoor unit. And if that unit sits in the bark mulch, that actually eats away at the fins and the copper, and that can create a leak over time. Besides blocking airflow at the bottom of the coil, but just make sure it's not sitting in bark mulch. Raise it up, I used to tell people, put gravel around it. Put bark mulch everywhere else.
I mean, we're going to visually check and look for traces of oil.
Yeah, that's a big one. You will see it oftentimes. If you do that after, if you look for oil after you've cleaned the coil, it's going to be a lot harder to see. So before you even start thinking about cleaning down that coil, just take a quick peek.
Yeah, visually inspect it first.
Yep.
Another thing you got to watch out for on the outdoor units is critters. I know up in New England when I was in the field, I could tell by the smell as I walked up to a unit if it was full of mice.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And there's other kinds of things. I know down in some of the southern states, they got these things called crazy ants. That's a whole another topic. Oh, yeah. But mice, I know, Scott, down where are you at? I would imagine snakes might be an issue.
No, yep. Frogs. Frogs. I never thought frogs would be a problem, but here in Georgia, frogs.
Wow.
Yeah. Every class that I've done to date, I've always asked what the biggest issues they find. And 9 out of 10 times, they always mention frogs.
The biggest issue for me as far as critters is mice chewing the wires or building a nest in there and dying. And
Squirrels. Are about chewing wire, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, squirrels and mice up here. Actually, it was funny. One of the first times I taught the preventative maintenance portion, I had Roland sitting in, and he was talking about, you want to make sure you keep an eye out for lizards. And we were in the Northeast when I'm teaching the class. We're at the Boston Training Center. And he said, make sure you check for lizards. And it threw us all for a loop because we don't have lizards up here.
Well, Roland's from Orlando. He's got lizards or geckos over
there. Oh, that's good.
Yep.
So another thing to look for, especially on heat pump systems, and this even goes back to conventional systems, the openings under the coil in the bottom of the base of the unit.
So make sure that they drain.
Yes, to make sure that they're open so that when the unit goes into defrost, they can freely clean.
Another thing you can do at the outdoor is our LEVs. Right. So sometimes that our drive shaft and LEV can get corroded or dirty, and it breaks the contact for our LEV to meter to pulse down up or down. So take it off, clean it up, clean up the drive shaft, and then snap it back on.
Don't forget to do the same thing to the head.
To the head, yeah.
That area. I mean, what do you use to clean it up with? Sandpaper?
So I've been a couple guys that I know they use the drive shaft. They clean with WD-40. It's just something just to clean it up. Juan, what do you typically recommend?
I mean, steel wool.
Yeah, steel wool is good.
I tell them the same thing you use to clean your flame sensor and the gas rings.
And when we're talking city multi, we may also want to do that with our indoors, right? Our indoor coils also have an LEV, so we may want to consider doing that when we're on the indoor portion of our preventative maintenance.
Right. Well, we'll get to the indoor next, but again, specific to heat pumps, not so much as part of maintenance, but here in the winter, I have a heat pump at my house, and we luckily the last couple of winters weren't too bad, but there was one winter we had 9 feet of snow in 6 weeks. And I can't tell you how many times I went out there with a shovel just to get the snow away from the outdoor unit, because it needs to breathe. And if it's not breathing, it's not working.
Yeah, I think, was that the year that they ended up just shoveling snow into the ocean?
Yeah.
Do you remember that a couple of years ago?
Oh, wow.
They had, big excavators just pulling snow from the streets and putting it in warehouses. And then when the warehouses filled up, they put it in the ocean.
They have a big parking lot in Boston, not to digress here too much, but there's a big parking lot in Boston where they dump all the snow. And you can always tell there's always a day in the summer when the last bit of it melts. Now, snow that's not dirty melts pretty quickly once spring hits. But once it gets dirty, the density changes. But it was like August, late August, by the time the last bit of snow melted in that parking lot. And that's just unreal. Now, that we digress. Okay. And then anything left at the outdoor unit?
The only, it's got nothing to do with maintenance, but the only thing I want to mention here is that if you're not careful where you install the outdoor unit, you're creating a maintenance cavity. Because I've had the call. I mean, my coil is full of lint. Notice it installed right outside the dryer vent. I've had commercial contractors, but my coil is 10 months old and it's covering grease. We said, well, is it right next to our kitchen exhaust hood? I mean, you got to be careful where you put these units.
Yeah. We know that in restaurants, there's some foods, especially in walk-ins, that will help corrode the coils, and I forget what those foods are. I think onions seems to come to mind, but so if you got a kitchen exhaust and it's out near a unit, that's not good. the dryer exhaust, I'd be worried with all the bleaches and detergents that go in there. Yes. That could help eat away at that coil. Now, you know, besides all the lint that's going to clog it up. And I know up here in New England in the springtime, we got a lot of pollens.
Mm.
And you take these coils and you clean them, you know, in the summertime and all those spring pollens, they just love to just clog up the coils. So those are all things you got to be aware of.
And besides cleaning it up, think about it. In the winter, if you're exhausting that dryer next to an outdoor coil, you're creating defrost havoc.
Yep.
Because how humid is that air? You're adding frost to that outdoor coil.
Yeah, and keep it away from dryer vents and kitchen vents and everything else. And another thing that I used to deal with is people for some reason don't like to see the condensing units when they're in the yard, so they put bushes around them. And then, and these bushes grow and they get in there. And I've seen them where there's zero clearance between the shrubs and these condensing units. The stuff starts growing in there, you know, these little some of these old brick buildings that have all the ivy going up the side and they get into the units and they don't take care. You got to be careful of all that.
Oh, yeah, that's all Georgia right there.
Yeah, my favorite calls were always the ones where you had to go to do the preventative maintenance and they mounted the outdoor unit underneath the deck that was 3 feet tall. So you had to crawl over to it and it's got no airflow anywhere. And
yeah, well, at least with our systems that don't discharge up, it it's okay as long as you got room in the back and the front.
But service access is part of it, you know? Service access is part of it.
Yeah, we had it when I first started here with Mitsubishi. There was a homeowner walked in off the street with her contractor, and he just wanted to show her what the equipment looks like. And she says, "Well, I want air conditioning, but I don't want to see anything on my walls, my ceilings, or my floors." I go, "Okay, open a window. It's got to go somewhere." Are we done outdoors?
Well, let's talk about real quick, because this is happens a lot, I think, in our time with servicing or maintenance. Is one of the things is guys, first thing they want to do is they want to hook up cages.
Oh, right? Yeah. You know what? I got to tell you, Scott, I'm a little older than you by a few months, but when I went to school, the teachers were hammering. What's so funny? When I went to HVAC school, the instructors hammered home, if you go change a capacitor, put gauges on it. If you're changing a thermostat, put gauges on it. No matter what you do, put gauges on it. And that is, I can't emphasize this enough, that is no longer the case. Mm-mm. If you have good airflow, if you have good delta T, which, by the way, you can't check until you do this maintenance. If it's dirty, you can't check that. There's no reason to throw gauges on unless you suspect a refrigerant issue, and before you go there, check for airflow and make sure that's good. Every time you put gauges on a system, you're robbing it of refrigerant. You could be introducing contaminants. So it's a no. No gauges unless you absolutely have to and you suspect a problem. And on City Multi, you don't have to put gauges on there because you can hook up your maintenance tool and get your pressures.
City Multi and Smart Multi, for that matter.
That's right. Yep.
Smart
Multi. Yep.
But yeah, I mean, everything's critically charged now, especially with our stuff. I mean, everything we have is critically charged. If you're hooking up gauges every single maintenance over 4 years, you're going to lose 12 inches of hose worth of refrigerant every single time you hook up. And over time, that'll cause an issue. So use the resources prior to hooking up gauges. But what about the indoor? What are we doing at the indoor to do a solid preventative maintenance?
Well, you know that earlier, blower wheels, you got to clean them. And the big reason why is thermal on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that means our blower wheels never stop turning. And during that, they just collect dust over and over and over. So that's a must.
Yeah. And if you have, and I know we're not going to talk about sizing, but if you've got an oversized unit and it's cooling and it's not removing enough humidity, that's going to make that problem worse. So if you've got a dirty blower and it gets dirty in a year or two, now you got to start looking, okay, what else could be wrong here? But in all cases, any debris that gets on that blower wheel, it doesn't come from the system. It's a product of the air around it. So that's important to know.
Yeah, and I mean,
check the filter.
Yep, definitely want to check the filter. And that's why when I was talking about the outdoor units, this is where all of this stuff comes in, is before I even start my outdoor, I come in and look at the indoors. I take a look at the filters and blower wheels, because if you've ever had to clean a blower wheel, you don't want to do it in the living room. By the time all that dust is built up and you've made the decision, hey, this blower wheel needs to come out for a full deep cleaning, you're not going to do it in the living room. It's going to go outside. You're going to rinse it off. So it's always good to just take a quick peek.
Hey, Brent, you can't use compressed air and just blow it right there, right in the unit? Can't do that?
Is that wrong?
I have had
a Minko press there. I've got R410 right next to me.
Yep. Nitrogen.
Right.
I have seen one of the techs I used to work with used to go through with one of those small like soot brushes, the tiny little ones. And he would go through every single fin inside the house so he didn't have to pull that blower wheel. And I will say, I don't think that's the most efficient way.
No, I don't agree with that either. But I will tell you, years ago, actually, this has happened more than once, but I had some young kids say, the blower, look, I can take it out in less than 30 seconds. And people are complaining, no, you can't. Well, this guy did.
Yeah.
This kid did. You can take these out. It's not as hard as you think. You just got to do it several times and practice with it, you know, and you'll get it. But they're not all that hard to take out, not as hard as you think. Just get over the fear.
Yep. And in my two-day M&P class, that's something that I do in the morning sometimes on the second day is I'll have them do a race, a relay race to get that blower wheel out and put back in. And I've seen them do it in 4 minutes, in and out.
In and out, yeah.
So it doesn't take much. But yes, cleaning filters, right, cleaning blower wheels. What else?
Still got to clean the coil.
Thing is, maybe over time, homeowners would put something that blocks the return, you know, for air circulation for the unit. That could be a big one.
You need to make sure that can breathe too. It needs airflow. In fact, if you look at the clearances in our install manuals, they only have to do with airflow. Mm-hmm. They don't take into account service. The installer installing the piece of equipment has to account for service, but all of the clearances, they're only taken into account airflow, so feel free to exceed those clearances. All right, and we got to clean the coil.
Yep, we're going to do the same things drain. We do outside, right?
Yeah, this one has a drain of the condensate drain. Outside, we were checking if it's a heat pump, you got to make sure that the water can leave the outdoor unit. And hopefully, when it was installed, it was raised up so the water can drain out. It's not on a flat surface. Yep. But inside, it's the drain, it's the coil again. It's water is the best thing to go. There's, you know, and I've seen people put these coil cleaners on there, and they smell like flowers and dishwashing detergent or something. And that odor is hard to get off. You gotta rinse those up. So yes. Water, if it's done every year like it should be, or a minimum of once a year, water should do the trick as long as the filters are being changed. And then
I didn't mention, sometimes it may be too late, but it may be an issue with performance of the system is proper clearances.
Mm-hmm.
Proper what?
Clearance.
Oh, clearance. Yeah.
Yeah. If you mount that wall mount too close to the ceiling and you're not picking up any of that return air, you're going to be suffocating that coil.
Yeah. We've actually had a case where somebody had it mounted too close to the ceiling and we're trying to tell them it's an airflow problem. He goes, no, it's not. But you open the front panel, you got good air. You close the panel, no air open. Because the wall units are taking air from the top of it for the return. So that's important. But hopefully you catch that before maintenance.
That's the plan.
And then what about for visual inspections, Juan? What are you checking indoors?
Same thing as you would the outdoor electrical connections. Make sure there's no compromise to wiring, shorted, rubbing against metal. Things like that will create a problem in the future.
I got to mention, we were talking about the blower wheel. Our FS units actually have a dual barrier coating on the wheel. So there's,
and our GS ball.
And that's right, the GS is now. So they have a resistance to, and I honestly don't know how they do it. I didn't read up on it yet, but I've seen the comparisons and the pictures and the literature on it. It's pretty impressive. Those things are going to be resistant to anything sticking to them.
Speaking of checking condensates, I bring this up quite a bit because I wasn't smart enough to invest or to bring out my shop vac and hook up my condensate outside to that corrugated hose that we drain our, you know, indoor coils from usually, and use a shop vac to suck any, you know, potential clogs in that condensate out. What I used to do was put my mouth on it and suck the contaminants into my mouth. And so I try to make a point now when I talk to contractors, use the shop vac.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you, there was one time when I had a drain. It was a unitary system, and it was in a post office, and the drain was clogged, and I cut the pipe out, and I'm trying to blow it through. So finally, I had to get out there and get some high pressure and blow it out. It was a dead mouse.
Oh, man.
So I never put my mouth on that junk again. Oh. Like that. It was awful. Yeah, I had to go home, you know, brush my teeth like 14 times. It was just – but, you know, but getting back to cleaning the drain, like on a wall unit, what I used to do is I had a piece of quarter-inch copper with a flare on it that I would put on the end of a hose, and I would fish the copper down as far as I could through the drain, And I'd put a rag there and I would let the nitrogen go and just push it. The reason I put the rag there is if it was clogged, it's going to splash back on you and all over the house.
Yep.
But if I had a clogged drain, that was, I found that was the best way to do it.
Yeah. There's more than one way to skin a cat.
Yep. All right. So we've cleaned the outdoor. We've cleaned the indoor. We've checked the filters and the coils and we've done an inspection. We've got the drains. We've looked for oil, which would indicate a leak. So we said, don't put the gauges on. So now we just get in the van and drive away.
Nope. We confirmed the Delta T. Yeah. You only need one tool for that. One a thermometer.
Yeah.
You don't need no gauge. And I ask a lot of my classes, what tool do you need to check performance of an air conditioning system? I mean, a lot of them will say the gauges. So No, you don't. You need a thermometer because once, if your Delta T is within the range, guess what? You just test the refrigerant charge and airflow.
Yeah. And you can also check the capacity. There was a podcast we did several weeks ago with Mike Cappuccio where he discusses how to do that. So go back and listen to that one, and he tells you how to check the capacity. But it's best to check the capacity with clean coils and clean filters. So I forget what it is, but you know I should know, but I haven't used it in so long you forget it. You know,
and not even just clean, but we just wash the outdoor coil and we wash the indoor coil. They've got a ton of water on them. So I usually will run them for about 10 to 15 minutes before I check my Delta T to let things dry out. If you don't, I mean, that water is going to act as a restriction on that coil. You may not see that Delta T.
Yeah, and it's a restriction, and it's going to affect the temperature of the coil. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, you need to let it run a good 15 or 20 minutes. And that's you let it run while you're cleaning everything up and putting stuff away.
Yep.
And then, to Juan's point, the only thing you need then after that's a temperature probe, and you're done. Nothing left to do but get paid.
Yeah. Well, so Juan, when you're checking Delta T, are you using one of those high tech laser thermometers?
Yeah. I'm old school. I'm using a sling thermometer.
You're not using a sling psychrometer, no?
No, I'm just a sling thermometer.
Yeah.
But not sticking it inside the unit where I might hit the floor.
You know, I've heard so many techs tell me that they got one of those little stick pencil thermometers, or little pocket thermometers. And so many guys have told me, they went to stick it in to get the temperature and
went too far.
There go all the veins. Yeah. I prefer the little thermocouple that comes on the end of the meter.
You plug
it in.
Yep.
And you know what? That's all you really need.
Yep. I bought a telescoping psychrometer because I'm 5'7" and so I didn't want to get up on a step stool to check return air temp. So it was a cool little telescoping. I could reach it from the ground and reach my return air, which is on the top of the unit, like you said. And I loved that thing. I'm big against the laser thermometers because it's a surface temp.
The laser thermometers are good to get a general idea if you got very high ceilings and to mess with the cat and the dog. That's about it.
I mean, if you're trying to see what your coil temp is, it's great.
Yes.
You know, they're not the most accurate, but if you get within relatively accurate, you're going to get a coil temp. Problem is we want air temp. When we're checking a Delta T, we're not concerned with what the coil temperature is. We want to know what our return air is and what our supply air is. And so you can't get that accomplished with a laser.
Also, just to piggyback on the maintenance, if you guys don't know this, for P-Series units and the service manual, outdoor service manual, there is it's a guide for operation condition. Basically, it tells you where to take temperatures. And you basically tells you the difference between this temperature and this temperature, and then put it on a graph below, and the graph will tell you, like, we got a graph for cool mode, a graph for heat mode, and if it lands in this area, it's normal operation. If it lands in, in this particular area, it tells you you need to inspect the filter. Then it tells you if you land on inspection C, that tells you filter of indoor heat exchanger may be clogged. Inspection A, performance has dropped. Detailed is necessary inspection. So there's a lot of information in this one if you actually take a look at it. It's in you have a P-Series equipment, service manual, and it's a guide for operation condition.
Yeah, I forgot about that. It's been a while since I've seen that, but that's good to know. Thank you, Scott.
It is a great tool.
And to piggyback on that, right, before you do this testing, I think we just discussed it, making sure that we run the equipment for a good, how long, Juan? 30 minutes, 15?
20, 30 minutes. The longer, the better. You need to allow the system to stabilize.
Good deal, guys. Anything else to add as far as maintenance? Just, I think the most important thing here, there's a misconception out there that mini splits don't need maintenance, and that could not be further from the truth. Every refrigeration system needs maintenance, and we're no different. Anything else to add, guys? Did we miss anything?
No, I don't think
I think we're good.
All right.
Juan, reminds me, I need to change my filter.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I got to do mine too. It's, I'm not going to tell you how long it's been, but I have to do mine too. But thank you guys for remoting in. Brent, thanks for coming in for this.
I think I'm going to make some Brussels sprouts. What do you think,
Juan? Yes. Well, I think we can
have
some eggs.
Eggs, Brussels sprouts, and work.
Yeah, we're going to go have eggs, Brussels sprouts, and eggplant right now. Let's go.
Okay. So, Brent, you mentioned you said it was a texture issue. So, do you like sushi?
Oh, I love sushi.
How in the world do you like sushi but don't like eggs? It's the same freaking texture going on in your mouth.
I've never met anybody in my life who doesn't like eggs.
The aromatics associated with eggs just does something foul that I just can't get on the board with. That's I can't.
The strangest thing I've
ever had. Get a hard-boiled egg, dump some salt on it, it's your best friend.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, until you smell it.
Well, look who's talking, a guy who doesn't like anything with beans in it.
Listen, a hard-boiled egg is essential.
All right. Okay, enough.
All right, guys.
All right, take care.
Take care.